From the Witherspoon Concert Hall in Omaha's Joslyn Memorial, KIOS-FM proudly presents another program from the Uta Holly Lecture Series. We'll hear a talk given by Jan C. Scruggs, Vietnam War veteran, and the founder of the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Monday morning, November 10, 2003, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Uta Holly Girls Village, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the speaker is Republican Senator from Nebraska, the Honorable Chuck Hagel.
I am particularly proud this morning to have an opportunity to introduce a dear friend, someone who has meant a great deal to this country from his service in Vietnam, where he was seriously wounded and came back, like many Vietnam veterans, unsure of the purpose of the Vietnam War, knowing that their country called them to duty. They didn't question that. And as the purpose of that duty was defined, it developed and it shaped these Vietnam veterans. This Vietnam veteran, Jan Scruggs, was a little different. He and his wife went to watch a movie one night in the late 1970s and came home. And he said to his wife, "I am going to ensure that there is a memorial built to those who lost their lives in Vietnam." Now, as important a fellow as Jan Scruggs is today, he hasn't always been that important. In fact, nobody knew him. He had a very high-powered job at the Department of Labor. I think he was a GS-4. Those of you who are not familiar with the rating system, that isn't very high. I'm not sure what a GS-4 does, if there's even a scale anymore for that. But nonetheless, he was a man determined to make a mark, not for himself, but for those who he had served with and their families and those he had watched die for this country. And he did in a short period of time, from the time he made that commitment to his wife to the time that we broke the ground for the Vietnam Veteran Memorial, which I had the privilege of being one of the four speakers for in March of 1982, to the time it was completed on Veterans Day in 1982. A relatively short period of time to accomplish something so large and so lasting for this country. And when you think about how it was done, and still the raging controversy over Vietnam, because you all recall that in the late 70s, early 80s, there was not yet the separation of understanding between the warrior and the war. And the controversy spilled over onto those who had served. Jan Scruggs and those of us who served didn't have much to say about the decisions that not only led us into Vietnam, but kept us in Vietnam for 11 years. But we did what we believed was the right thing to do for our country. And so to have all the veterans of this country for over 200 years. But Jan made this work. If there was ever a testament to American ingenuity and determination, in belief, it certainly is the story of Jan Scruggs. So it's a high honor for me to introduce him today. We have welcomed him to Omaha this morning with a front page story in the Omaha World Herald about a new addition that we believe will soon be built in Washington next to the Vietnam Veteran Memorial, and that's an educational veterans center, which will be mostly underground, attached to the Vietnam Veteran Memorial, which will enhance not just the Vietnam Veteran Memorial, but the understanding, the history, the perspective of what future generations some of us believe, is important to know. Memorials are built not for the past. Memorials are built for the future. And so, too, is this addition to the Vietnam Veteran Memorial. It is because of Jan Scruggs, like everything that's happened from the beginning to where we are today, because of his drive, his force of personality, his commitment to this country and those who served and continue to serve and will serve. And for all those reasons and many more, I'm very proud to present to you someone who is important to me, to our country, to our veterans, and who believes like us that the great moments of America are still ahead because of the great moments that we've had and that we've built onto, and much of that is because of our veterans. Ladies and gentlemen, Jan Scruggs.
Thank you so very much.
Well, I want to thank Senator Hagel for his kind introduction, really overly kind introduction. I'd like to point out that Senator Hagel proves that intelligent life does exist in Washington, D.C., because, you know, oftentimes... You know, I'm a lawyer, and we're not exactly on the endangered species list in the nation's capital, but we do sort of feel compelled to plead our profession's case and tell a little lawyer joke every time we get in front of the public. You know, there are so many lawyers in Washington, D.C. that if you actually put them face down in the Potomac River, not only would they stretch for 6 miles, but most people just soon leave them laying there. Now, there's the one about the lawyer from the Sand Hills, and he'd never really been to a big town like Omaha, Nebraska, but he had a great case. This case was going to make this boy retire at age 40, and he's got his old kind of crummy suit on and his little briefcase, and he's goes to Omaha, and he's going to try this big case, a personal injury case, and, you know, he's got his stuff ready and opens the door of this cheap little hotel he's in, and this is the biggest snowstorm in the history of Omaha, Nebraska. So he can barely get out of his hotel, gets to the courthouse, and he says, "Oh, my God, closed for the day." You know, I guess I got to go back to my hotel and watch TV. He's walking back to the hotel, his little briefcase. He passes the church, and he says, "You know, 46 years old, and I've never been inside of a church. Let me just try it." And he walks in there by himself, and he says, "Geez, boy, these things are big, aren't they? And all this stuff everywhere." And he's got $50 in his pocket, and he says, "Look, what the heck?" He puts it in the plate, and he says, "God, if you're real, maybe you could reveal yourself to me, and then I could, you know, sing your praises and everything." And out of nowhere, here comes God, and he says, "Well, hi." He says, "Well, look, I'm in a hurry," God says to him. But he says, "Well, I got a couple of questions." I said, "How much money, God, is $1 million to you?" And God said, "I don't know, like $1." He says, "So how much time is 1 million years to you, God?" And he says, "I don't know, a minute." So he says, "Look, God, why don't you give me $1? And God says, "I'll be with you in just a minute, sure." So I was invited here to tell you the strange but true story of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, which began after I graduated from high school. I was blessed with good, honest parents. Unfortunately, my parents were very poor, so the opportunities for me to go to college or travel to Europe or do something exciting like that just weren't there. But I did have an opportunity and strong encouragement to do what my other brothers did when they got out of high school, which was to go into the Army. So I volunteered for the draft, and next thing I knew, I was trained as an infantryman and sent to Vietnam right after I was 19 years old, and had a lot of opportunities to see, you know, certain amounts of combat, and my friends get killed and injured, as happens in every war. And I myself was seriously wounded, and also later decorated for gallantry. But It was really a kind of a bad year, and I would imagine it was a bad year for the guys who landed on Normandy Beach and the guys who were in Porkchop Hill, or for the guys right now who are in Iraq. They will always look back on it and say it was an exciting year of my life, but it was a hard time. So with that, I just want to show my respect for everybody who has served in other wars and who are serving our country so well now. But one day, this whole year was over, and there were smiling stewardesses and a nice airplane ride back to Maryland. Then I decided, you know, what am I really going to do with my life? And I came up with the idea of becoming an educated man, and went to college, and actually got a master's degree in psychology prior to getting my law degree, but decided that I would build a Vietnam Veterans Memorial, that somehow I would make this happen. And when I was in college, you see, I studied the survivors of cataclysmic events, of automobile wrecks, of terrible things like wars. And it was a great opportunity yesterday as I met with the people at the Uta Holly, the young ladies who had such a hard time in their lives and for whom we're all here to help. As I talked to these young ladies, recognizing that they, too, as military veterans, have had terrible experiences in their life with abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, and to see the burden on these young ladies' shoulders to try to overcome this, but to see the love and compassion there from the staff, you really have to feel good. So coming back from Vietnam and using this whole idea of post-traumatic stress disorder, which several of the girls mentioned to me in the question and answer period because they themselves were going through post-traumatic stress disorder, I took the idea for the Vietnam Veterans Memorial and I just said there's got to be a way to put a monument with names in the nation's capital. And my wife and I went to see a movie. One night, the movie was called The Deer Hunter with Robert De Niro, a very sort of nice, interesting movie, not particularly realistic about Vietnam, but it was sort of the first one that came out. And that night, I just couldn't go to sleep. And I said, this is something I've got to do. I'm going to do this. I'm going to build a national memorial for the Vietnam veterans. And I went to see my boss at the Department of Labor, where I was, you know, at the bottom of the totem pole. And I said, look, I need a couple of weeks off because I'm going to build a national Vietnam Veterans Memorial. You know, he pointed out that we all sort of need a mental health day from time to time, 2 weeks. But I took the week, 2 weeks, and looked upon this as an intellectually challenging thing to do, and felt that as I looked at my sort of old college papers, I looked at the thinking of a fellow named Carl Jung, spelt J-U-N-G. He was a student of Sigmund Freud, and Carl Jung had this absolutely brilliant thinking pattern, a theory about collective psychological states, about how we as a nation or a community, let's just think about Omaha or the state of Nebraska when your football team wins the big one. That should happen more often. You know how it sort of affects everybody, you know? When something, a tragedy happens in Omaha and something bad happens, it sort of affects everybody. He talked about the whole idea of collective psychological states. So the theory developed that just as individual Vietnam veterans would obviously need the Vietnam Veterans Memorial to see the names of their buddies to get their psychological catharsis, so too would the nation as a whole need to come to grips with Vietnam. And so too, just as the individual would be helped, the entire nation would be helped by the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. So great idea, 1979. I've got $2,500, which I sold a little piece of mountain property for. And I'm going to build this memorial. So I hire a lawyer, hire a press conference, and, you know, we announce the Vietnam Vets Memorial Project, and we got some press there. Unfortunately, 6 weeks later, I get a call from Associated Press and says, so how much money have you raised? You need $1 million to build the memorial. And I said, well, $144.50. So it's now July of 79. We're sort of going nowhere, but I think we sort of needed a team. Helen Keller said it best. Individually, we can do so little, but collectively, we can do so much more. So we put a good team together of veterans and lobbyists and bankers, even graduates from the Harvard Business School, who I might add were a continual source of amusement to me throughout the entire project. So what we did was we said, how are we really going to do this? Okay, there's a legislative component to this. There's a fundraising component. There's a design component. And there's a construction component. Let's do a timeline for this whole thing. And so we said, introduce the bill November 79, have a design in 1980, 81, and have it dedicated for November 1982. So we have a three-year time horizon. Could we make it or not? November 79, a fellow named Senator John Warner and Senator Charles Mathias, is now retired, Warner is still there, introduced the bill for us to authorize us to build the memorial. And then we pushed the bill through, and we're having a sort of a hard time getting this thing through, but we got more and more co-sponsors. And one morning I woke up to find that we had 95 out of 100 senators who'd co-sponsored the bill. So I said, now how do I get 100 co-sponsors? And I said, wait a minute. So I called up the first senator's press secretary and I said, you know, we have 99 co-sponsors on the bill and the CBS Evening News is trying to find out who the holdout is. And I did that five times and got 100 co-sponsors for the bill. So we got the bill through the House and Senate. President Carter at the time signed it into law. And in the Rose Garden, it was really nice. He brought Max Cleland there, who's now a retired senator. He lost his last election, but he was running the VA, and it was a great day. So we next had to figure something out. How do we get a design, and how would you get a design if you were in charge of building a monument honoring something? It could be veterans or it could be something else. Interestingly, here in Omaha, last night I was taken to see by Jody Hobson a monument we drove past, a monument to the survivors of cancer. I mean, isn't that a beautiful thing to memorialize? And only in a town like Omaha would you have such creative thought. But that monument, by the way, is used for special events, for walks and run-a-thons and all of this sort of thing to keep awareness going. So how would you come up with a design? Well, you'll probably say, what I'll do is I will hire an architect. Let me find the best architect. Or you'll say, let me find five different architects and we'll have a little contest. And what we did was had an architectural design competition, which became rather large. This was indeed the largest architectural design competition held in the history of Western civilization. The winning design came out on May 1st of 1981. And what a unique design this was. Two walls of highly polished black granite. Indeed, this black granite was in the shape of a chevron, coming out of the earth as if it were a wound, healing over time, followed by another amazing aspect. This would have the names, not alphabetically. And how many fellows do you think named John Smith are on a randomly selected list of 58,000 males? Well, there's 110 John Smiths who were killed in Vietnam. She said, let's put the names chronologically. So on November 4, 1967, you've got your own place. And if there was a battle there, all the guys would be right next to each other. So there may be one John Smith, and on 110 different places on the memorial, there's another John Smith. So you'll know which one is yours. But this will allow the veterans to go back in time and indeed to heal from their experiences. And her name was Maya Ying Lin, Chinese-American, just such a wonderful young lady who I will see next week, because next week in New York City. They will announce the 20 finalists, for the World Trade Center Memorial. Over 5,000 people have entered that contest, 5,000 entrants, and from every country in the world. And it's a magnificent project, a great tribute to the people of New York and how they will memorialize this, which they felt that they could only truly do by allowing the entire world to take part in this. So next week we'll unveil the first 20 designs in New York City. Well, we unveiled this design. There is only one little problem with it, is that it was a little bit unusual and different. So that's not always all bad, but sometimes when things are different than the way things have always been, people begin to object. But we unveiled it, started the process, the money is rolling in. But all of a sudden, October 2, 1981, we had sort of a huge problem, a huge controversy on our hand, because a veteran of the U.S. Army Green Berets decided that he was going to kill this project. And his name was Carhartt, and he had an interesting idea. He said, "This is the black gash of shame. Why is it that every monument in Washington, D.C. is white? But this one's black. Black," he said. "Black's the color of shame." So we said, "Oh, my God, we're in this middle of this big mess." The next thing you know, I'm appearing on 60 Minutes and Nightline, and we have a fellow decides to really stop this thing from being built. He's a guy from Texas. He's got a lot of money. He's not a real tall guy, but his name's H. Ross Perot. I don't even know if anyone's ever heard of him here. So he and I are on Nightline in 60 Minutes, and things are getting kind of up close and personal, but we're just trying to get this job done. So we finally found a way to make a compromise, or at least try. We asked Senator Warner to arrange a meeting in Washington, D.C., and at this meeting, it was I walked in with six guys, but a Texas billionaire walked in with 40 guys. So we're sort of outnumbered a little bit, but they say, you know, if you're outnumbered, you can't be outsmarted. So I brought with me a fella named George Price. He's the brother of an opera singer named Leontine Price. Did everyone ever heard of Leontine Price? You know, she's a black opera singer. And I said, "General, look, you just sit there and wait for this Green Beret to stand up and talk about black being the color of shame, and why don't you just sort of roll into him right there?" So very quickly, the color of the memorial was no longer an issue. So now that we don't have a problem with the color of the memorial, how do we change this and get this thing underway? And the idea came about to have the three servicemen statue, and as a compromise, and the statue is now there, that we would have some sort of a conventional element with an unconventional memorial. So, you know, finally we got our construction permit, and we got the project underway, and in November 11, 1982, just as I had hoped, you know, that 3 years before, the memorial was actually dedicated. And nothing in terms of memorials in Washington has ever been done that quickly, nor will anything ever be done that quickly again. They've sort of changed the rules to make sure that it doesn't happen again, but that's okay. It had to happen this time. And on that day, it was a wonderful time, as tens of thousands of veterans were there. And as you go to Washington, you look at the wonderful words of President Abraham Lincoln from his second inaugural. "Let us strive to bind the nation's wounds, to care for those who bore the battle, and to become a nation that will seek a just and lasting peace among ourselves and among all nations." These are the great words of President Lincoln as he looked upon the crowd of veterans dedicating that memorial. And today, thanks to Senator Hagel, we are upon yet another quest, a quest to build a visitor center at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, a visitor center for America's youth, where they will learn about patriotism, sacrifice, and duty to country. And Senator Hagel and I both hail from the Republican Party, and we have a certain philosophy in the Republican Party, which is that less government can sometimes be more effective than more government, that we can save money for important programs and do things with the money from the private sector as well to augment the government. So we built the memorial without one penny from the federal government. We will do the same for the visitor center at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. And we need important government programs and these especially to take care of people who are the veterans and people who are wounded, but there are certain things that the private sector and the people must do and become more important because of that. Let me at this time show you some video, which will tell you a little bit more about the memorial, and then I'll have a couple of words to end my presentation.
I think it will be even more of a framing of our culture, our society, at this particular time in history, in the last quarter century of the 20th century. I think it will reflect beautifully, admirably, what America was about in the late 20th century, what the generation that fought in Vietnam was about, and how that memorial reflects the time.
How long will this memorial remain relevant? Perhaps that is up to us, and whether or not we have learned the lessons of Vietnam.
Well, I think the Vietnam Veterans Memorial captures better than anything that I've ever seen in Washington or elsewhere the human cost of war. And somehow it just brings the pain and the sadness and the total waste just home to people in such a profound way that it actually transcends just the Vietnam War. It to some degree represents the tragedy of all wars, I think.
I don't think the power of this is going to diminish as the sort of families of the Vietnam vets die off. I think this thing is going to be remembered. I think people understand what happened real well.
Will we ever again be willing to pay the price of a war like this? What about future generations? How will they react to the war? The answer is remarkably simple. A visit to the memorial is a visit to a national shrine. The spirits will touch future generations as they touch us. For we see our own reflection mirrored in the names of the fallen soldiers from a war that ended in 1975.
So I think that the next time that somebody comes up with some cockamamie idea to get involved in a war that we don't have a clear-cut strategy, somebody's going to have a press conference right around here.
Our nation has thought long and hard about Vietnam. We have searched for some lesson, any lesson that would make our longest war seem less futile. Now what seemed like an impossible dream from former Army Corporal Jan Scruggs graces the Mall in Washington. The wall reminds us all of the terrible price paid by those who answered the call during a difficult time in America's history.
I often come down here and I meet other people. I've met people that were with my dad. I've met other kids that have lost their dads. And so it's just an opportunity for us to share and reflect with one another.
It says that you better be awfully sure if you're a national government before you dedicate forces and put men and women in harm's way, that you know what you're doing, that you have a mission, that you know how to win, and that you're committed to win.
Also, because of my weird hours, I've been known to drop by the wall at 2 or 3 in the morning sometimes, just for 10 minutes or so. There's always somebody here. There's always something that someone has left here, and I think that is part of the living legacy of the wall.
The price that America is willing to pay in order to bring about a better life that offers freedom to people so they can have the potential to better themselves. And I think that's why we were over there, and in order to bring a better life to the Vietnamese people, and that's why we now have this great monument to symbolize the sacrifice that they were willing to pay in order to bring about attempt to bring about change for the better in Vietnam.
The wall that heals. Yes, it's a wall for us to visit, and a wall to help heal the pain. Never again, they say. Never again. Let us pray that they really mean what they say this time. Good night.
Well, it's always an honor to join friends such as Senators Bob Dole and Chuck Hagel, Mac Mathias and John Warner for an occasion like this. And over the years, it's been a rewarding pleasure to have supported Jan Scruggs and the outstanding work that he has devoted his life to at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. The Vietnam War seems to fade away with each passing year, but with the beauty and spirit of a memorial like this, fortunately, we will always be able to reflect on this time in history by way of the men and women whose names are listed on its granite panels. It's an American wall to remember, one I hope we will never forget. Thank you, and veterans everywhere.
The Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund has important programs to continue the healing legacy of the wall. Programs include a half-scale traveling replica. Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund prepares and distributes educational materials to high schools nationwide. Today's youth need to know about the war in Vietnam and the people it served. The Memorial Fund has had an amazing past, but the future efforts are even more important. As Jan Scruggs and the fund he created moves the focus to education and preserving the legacy of the wall that heals.
And our remarks today, I hearken back to the words of Thomas Jefferson, the Declaration of Independence, as he wrote, "All men are created equal." Reading that in law school, of course, learning at the time to be argumentative, I said, well, I don't really agree with that. Are we really all created equal? I mean, don't some people have this great knack for mathematics, art, athletics? I mean, aren't we kind of created unequal a little bit? But I believe that there is a great equalizer in life, and that equalizer is courage. And courage and the ability to show courage makes a big difference. It can be on a battlefield. It can be making a contribution to your community. Courage is life's great equalizer. So in ending my remarks today, I give you my favorite quote on the subject of courage, written by Charles Moran Wilson. Charles Wilson was a battlefield surgeon, World War I in the British Army. He himself was highly decorated, and he saw so many soldiers of both sides. So as his life went on, he thought about courage, and this is what he wrote. He wrote, "Courage is a moral quality. It is not a chance gift of nature like an aptitude for games. Courage is a cold, hard choice between two alternatives." Courage, he wrote, is the fixed resolve not to quit, which must be made not once, but
many times by the power of the will. Courage, he wrote, is willpower. My final comment on courage is that courage doesn't mean you're not afraid. Courage merely gives you the strength to look your fears in the face and to do the thing you have to do. Thank you for being such a kind audience.
You've been listening to a program from the Uta Hawley Lecture Series. We've heard a talk given by Vietnam War veteran and founder of the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C., Jan C. Scruggs. This program was recorded by KIOS-FM on Monday morning, November 10th, 2003, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Greg Petler for his help in the recording of this program. Special thanks also to Jerry Ann Cowan, Publicity Chairman for the Uta Hawley Lecture Series, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Audio cassette and CD copies are available for $15. Send a check or money order to Uta Hawley Girls Village, care of Tracy Wells, 3017 Mormon Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68112-2205. All proceeds from the sale of tapes and CDs will go to benefit the Uta Hawley Girls Village. Please allow 3 to 4 weeks for delivery. The next lecture in the series will be Monday morning, April 14th at 11 o'clock. The guest speaker will be USA Today war correspondent Tom Scateri. He'll talk about the progress of the war against terror. If you'd like to attend this or other lectures in the series, call the Uta Hawley Girls Village at 453-0803. Complete Noon Forum listings are available on the Internet. Visit our website at kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.